Today, we have an awesome chat on this new wave in Bitcoin about solidifying and writing down our ideas and making them accessible to the average person, about the panic and desperation that we're seeing from Bitcoin haters, and the feedback loops and game theory that will make Bitcoin a dominant macro political force. All this and more in chat number 55 with Knut von Holm and Andy Edstrom. What is up, guys? Welcome back to Bitcoin Audible. I am Guy Swan, the guy who has read more about Bitcoin than anybody else you know, and we've got an awesome chat. Today, I got to sit down with two of my favorite authors, thinkers, and just all-around great guys in the Bitcoin space last week, and we just kind of went for an hour and a half. I'm really excited to finally drop this one because I've been sitting on it for a couple of days here. We have got Knut von Holm, author of, you've probably either listened to it on this show or on Audible. I did the audio of them, of Sovereignty Through Mathematics and Independence Reimagined, as well as a lot of other little content and videos and stuff recently. And Andy Edstrom, who's been just killing it and working with the Swan Bitcoin guys, and author of Why Buy Bitcoin. And it was just awesome to sit down with them and go through everything that we think of as the challenges, the focus, and what we can expect in 2021 and Bitcoin. Real quick, before we jump into it, let's thank our sponsors. If you are one of the addicts that likes to try and play the swings to stack some more sats, the one thing I tell you you should not do is pay fees for doing so when we have Level.co. They're a free exchange with no trading fees. And if you're actually just trying to live off of Bitcoin and just use it day to day, they have full Bitcoin banking services. They just have an awesome suite of products to take advantage of. They are at levellvl.co. And for the holders, for the long-term Bitcoin savings, if you have any significant amount, you got to get a hardware wallet. The Bitbox O2 is as simple and secure as it gets. It's from Shift Crypto, and it's just an amazing product to hold your keys in as simple a process as possible. Check these guys out. Check both of our sponsors out at guyswann.com. And with that, let's get into chat number 55 with Knut von Holm and Andy Edstrom.
Government TV.
Yeah.
I always feel more professional than the politicians, and like, they're so embarrassing.
It's so funny knowing something like Bitcoin and like really digging into like kind of the nit and gritty about it. I guess this is kind of true of anything, particularly in the context of like politics or journalism, is that if you know like serious detail about some sort of a topic and then watch the media talk about it, it becomes so unbelievably obvious that they have no idea what they're doing.
Yeah, it's the same if you make the news for anything, really.
Yeah.
Like, whenever you've been interviewed by a regular journalist and you read the thing afterwards, it's like, what the hell are they talking about? Didn't they understand any word I just said? It's ridiculous.
So there's actually a term for this, which you may have heard before, which is called Gell-Mann amnesia. And it's named after Murray Gell-Mann, you know, the genius physicist, basically, that helped build the American nuclear program. He went on record talking about it one time. And the way he framed it was, I'm reading the newspaper, right? And then I read something about a topic I know a lot about. And I say, oh my God, this is complete BS, right? They have it so wrong. And then 30 seconds later, I read the next article and it's not in an area of expertise. And I'm like, oh yeah, that sounds kind of right. So the amnesia part is, we read the part that we know is wrong about the topic we understand, but then we forget, you know, to apply that lens to the other topics that we don't understand as well.
Yeah. Exactly the level of accuracy that they talk about foreign policy, that they talk about the effects of this new regulation, that like they genuinely are ignorant of everything. They specialize in nothing, and therefore they always just don't know what they're talking about.
Yeah, they're bloggers with hubris. That's my term for a normal journalist. It's a blogger with hubris.
I love it. I think there will be books written solely on the topic of how poorly Bitcoin was covered by the mainstream media.
We should write one, Andy.
I would love to read that book, write that book, do the audio for that book.
Yeah, Bitcoin Obituary is like a good place to start.
I love that site, man. That's one of my favorite websites, Bitcoin Obituaries.
Wait, which one? Oh, Obituaries. Yes.
Yeah. How are you guys?
Added any new ones recently?
Good to see you, by the way. And thank you, Guy, for all the superb narration to these little video experiments.
Oh, yeah, man. Oh, yeah, I'm loving those.
Yeah. And they
really well.
Yeah, I love Yoni's stuff. He's such a talented guy and so underrated. And like, I've been wanting to work with him for years, and this is just a dream come true.
Yeah, y'all just seem to be pumping it out.
Yeah, you got this partnership that you guys have put together is the art is awesome. Of course, the narration is awesome. The content, very not digestible, so very digestible. Yeah, that's great. It's great stuff. One more powerful tool in the arsenal for Bitcoin education.
Yeah, thank you. The last one is the first piece I actually wrote with a video in mind. So that was a new experience, and I think it turned out really well. It's so overly bullish.
Those are the good ones, though.
Are you talking about the is this the exponential one?
Yeah, the one about the J curve in this, rather than the S curve.
It is very, very bullish. I'm not sure I'm 100% convinced, but I like it.
Yep. Me neither, but it doesn't matter.
Yeah, well, I am working on. So I don't know about you guys. I feel like the bull market's barely begun. I'm already exhausted. I am working on an article right now that I'm hoping to put out maybe soon. We'll see how it goes. Be the first thing I've written for publication in a little while. But Knut, is there an opportunity to like rework and bring forward some of the articles that you wrote in past years? I mean, your catalog, what are you doing with your catalog?
Nothing. I'm like that was sort of my training ground. That's how I view it nowadays. But fair. there's some stuff there. I mean, some of it ended up in Sovereignty, and like some of it I just rethunk and put in Independence Reimagine. Well, there's some stuff there, definitely. Well, did you do some digging or what?
No, I haven't. I should I think we've all got my first report that I wrote on the quote unquote crypto space. Most of it held up, not all of it. I mean, there's definitely some stuff in there that I would probably erase. Fortunately, I didn't fully publish it. I sent it to a lot of people, but I didn't, put it on a website. So it may or may not be lurking in the bowels of the internet. What about you, Guy? The good thing about starting out with narration is you can hide behind the logic that it's not your original content.
It's funny because I have a really terrible habit of starting like 1800 different things and never finishing any of them. I'm not sure if the podcast has helped or hurt, in the sense that like I just can't get something done. Yeah. Like I've got a couple of one that I really want to, and I've broken down, I've read like the first half of it to my brother, and he keeps giving me shit about it. He's like, dude, you have got to finish that one. It's a little fiction story about an old wizard who comes into a town and meets an artisan, and they kind of have like this conflict, and then he invents this new money But it's really a conflict between the two characters and how the money plays out. It like originally they're kind of at odds, and then they kind of learn how it is that they're actually not enemies, kind of thing. But it's a fun little story that I really hope I get finished. So I'm not actually going to talk.
You should finish it and let Yoni animate it.
Seriously, yeah. It would be a rough animation job, though. Ioni would, I mean, unless of course he was just doing like the text or whatever. Obviously, text is much simpler. But if it actually caught steam, like if it was, because I intend to do, you know, background noise, ambient, like I want it to make actually kind of sound like you're listening to a movie. So the audiobook. If I actually get this stupid thing done, at least the audio I can do quick. You know, like I can,
go
through it. I'm in that motion or in that workflow. The writing, I just haven't. I'm just really bad. Like if I end up having extra time, I go back to, some other audiobook, or I go back to a tutorial or something for the website. You know, there's just like 12 things that I put in front of it. And then I'll find a couple minutes to sit down and go write something, and I'll get two paragraphs out and, you know, flesh out the next three pages, but just never put it down. So
yeah, that's, you have an insane output.
Yeah. You don't want to threaten the core, you know, the core mission, the core product. I agree with Knut. I mean, it's,
that's kind of the idea.
You're cranking out a lot.
Yeah. But I know about having like, started a thousand projects and like, maybe one or two of them comes to actual fruition, but I'm like that as well. Like I have so many documents called unnamed documents.
Yeah. I always try to. That's the one thing that I do is I will get out a working title, so that like I'm a little bit more inclined to go back and check it out if I see like, oh, Satoshi's Gift, that piece, like if it will spark a little bit of something in me. So I always work really hard to make sure I at least get a title, but it doesn't seem to work very well, so maybe it's not the greatest of strategies.
One thing I'd like to do this year that I haven't really yet or haven't enough is collaborate more. You guys have both generously, I think, offered to collaborate with me, and I haven't got around to it, but I should. I am working on an article that I'd like to collab with someone on. So maybe we should talk about that. But
sure.
That's actually a really good idea.
You guys have created awesome content by bringing together, you know, different talents in the space and put together deadly commando teams cranking out amazing Bitcoin content.
Yeah, but the thing is, it's the same thing with those projects. You start like 10 of them, and then maybe one becomes something.
Yeah.
Like the Kayvan's movie project there, it seemed like it sort of died out. Yeah. And there was a board game project that sort of just went to nothing. And like, well, I think you should focus on, or at least it's easier for me to focus on something small and see what happens with it when it comes to collaboration. Because if you take on a too big a task, or like if you try to polish something for too long, you lose the edge and you lose the creative flow.
Yeah, it'll never get done. It does compound. No. The more cooks in the kitchen, the more you compound the risk of just not getting it over the finish line. That's for sure.
Yeah. Did you see the what's it called? 6 Days to Air, the making of South Park?
No, I haven't. I would love to see that.
It's an episode called The Human Scent iPad.
Yes. I've heard of that one. I haven't seen it.
It's hilarious.
Love South Park, but I have, you know, two kids and a third on the way.
Yeah.
And I have no time. I really annoy my college friends because I'm constantly quoting South Park episodes. But like early South, like, you know, season two through five.
All right.
They're like, Andy, you got to get some new material. You got to watch the new stuff. And I just, I'm stuck in the past.
Yeah. They don't like the season 25 or some shit now.
Like, yeah. There's something like that. And there's still really funny. But anyway, the six, 6 days to air episode is about they start working on an episode 6 days before it airs. Right. And that's just unbelievable. Yeah. Like, because they've realized that they work better under pressure, and if they
force themselves to get
just brains, yeah, forcing themselves to do it and just go with whatever's the hot topic for the moment and just what comes into mind. And I believe that's the way to go. Really, just let creativity flow. And
yeah, well, if you're releasing like Guy Swan and you're releasing on the daily, then it's like, you know, gotta crank it out.
Yeah, but there's a difference between, I guess, just reading stuff and actually writing something, or reading something that you wrote yourself, and like, I mean, reading something is creative also in a way, because you can like phrase things in different ways, but it's not the same as creating something from nothing.
No, I agree.
The guy's take has always been like the hardest part, because trying to get something out that, you know, relating it back to, particularly early on, like that was the thing that I would always skip, because
that's the best part.
You know, like it's
that's because it's the hardest.
It is.
Yeah, but it's so unfiltered and pure. You just put your thoughts out there, and I love it.
Yeah, and I've kind of gotten into, it took me damn near 100 episodes to really get where I could do this, but that I just finished reading it, and then I just brain dump for 30 minutes, 40 minutes, and then just close it out, and I don't think about it. I don't go back and edit anything. I just was like, all right, I'm out. Like, you know, 6 days to launch. I just got to push it out, get working on the next one.
See if I Well, speaking of having a deadline, you know, or, you know, whether artificial or real, to get something out, for me, for my book, when I published it last year, the price was rising. And at that point, it wasn't as clear, you know, that it was going to be around the 4-year halving cycle. At least it wasn't as clear to me. So the price was going up in the summer, and I was like, shit, I got to get this thing out.
Yeah.
It's an investment thesis, so it would be nice if, you know, the price were lower, you know, rather than higher, so that the upside, you know, calculation would be more compelling.
Yeah. But another thing, have you experienced this, that you get sort of, I mean, you have a drive to create something. And when you don't for extended periods of time, you're like, I shouldn't play computer games. When I come home from work or whatever, I should focus on something, creating something. And then you don't, and you sort of feel bad for it. But I've realized that those in between periods are just as important, because then that's where the ideas grow. And like, when you're out running or something, or like in the shower or whatever, that's where the ideas are born. And they're just as important as the actual writing. And like, they're part of the process.
Yeah, that's spot on. If only it were as simple as, you know, ideation, you know, through execution and you're done.
Yeah.
Like, where's the thing that I could just like plug in, or like just sit on my head and just have it write for me as I flesh the shit out?
Yeah, but fleshing it out is actually the easy part. Like getting an original idea. That's like, you have no control over that. You don't know when you're going to get one, and you don't know where they come from. And like, you can just hope for them. That's all you can do.
That one comes along at some point.
Yeah.
That's
well, I don't know if we've officially started this.
It seemed like a good start.
It seemed like a good start. I feel like we just rolled into it.
Shall we introduce ourselves? Or
yeah, I was just thinking, because I haven't had Andy on the show before, but both of you, welcome, Knut, welcome back. Andy, welcome. A little bit overdue, really. But give us a little short introduction for anybody who hasn't listened to all 600 episodes and hasn't heard both of your names multiple times. Andy, let's start with you, actually. Who are you? What awesome shit did you write? And what are you up to these days?
All right, cool. Yeah, Guy, it's awesome to be on with you. Knut, always a pleasure. Quick on me. I started my career on the dark side in legacy finance. You know, worked for Goldman Sachs in New York, worked for a private equity fund, worked for a hedge fund doing investing, got into my family's business, which is wealth management. That was 8 years ago. And as far as Bitcoin is concerned, yeah, I wrote this book, Why Buy Bitcoin? I wrote it in part to educate my clients whose money I manage. I wrote it in part because I saw something missing in the marketplace in terms of the books that were available out there. And yeah, it's been for me, you know, I was class of 2017 in terms of Bitcoin. I did the usual hero's journey of, you know, Bitcoin to all the altcoin shitcoins to back to Bitcoin is the thing. And yeah, the book's been out since September of last year. And it's just been so much fun. It's been a wild ride. You know, I've been doing podcasts to promote it. Over the last year, made some predictions that got me a little bit of notoriety. And I haven't had this much fun in a very long time, I have to say. The community is so amazing. It's so welcoming. It's fun for me to try and be this bridge between the legacy financial system that is in terminal decline and this wonderful new system that is building in front of us that we're all trying to play our very small part in helping foster. So yeah, I guess that's a little bit about me, and it's really a pleasure to be on with both of you. I love both of your, you know, you guys, your content has been very helpful to me in learning about Bitcoin in both cases. So I'm grateful for both you guys, and it's a pleasure to be talking to you.
Yeah, man, ditto. It's funny, American HODL tweeted just yesterday or something, sometime, talking about, you know, all I do every single day, I just talk about Bitcoin all day long, and you think I'd get sick of it. You think I'd be bored with it by now, and I'm not. It's as exciting as it was the first day that I started. And I cannot help but mirror that sentiment that, you know, 600 episodes of the show, I've read damn near, I thought, every idea that you could have about Bitcoin, but I constantly still bump into new shit and new ways to think about it that some brilliant, unique perspective has just sitting in some different corner looking at it from a different angle. And, you know, just explains, you know, that analogy or the metaphor or whatever of all the blind people looking at the elephant, you know, just manages to see something a little bit different or like in a unique way. And it's a never ending, truly never ending rabbit hole. It's just always fascinating. And I'm excited, dude. I still haven't even read your book. I don't have time to read anything that I'm not putting on the show. So I refresh your stupid Twitter page waiting for you to say the audiobook is done.
I think I might be a month away, I'm hoping. Guy, okay. If in case anyone knows, very graciously offered to narrate my audiobook. I turned him down for personal reasons, but I think we're close to getting it done.
I'm excited. It'll be good to be able to listen to one. All that, right. I didn't go through and just actually be able to get it in audiobook the first round. That's how I do all my books now.
Are you reading it yourself, Andy?
Yes, I am, and I've done the full narration. There's a few pieces that I think need a recut, you know, need a redo, and yeah, I made the decision. A lot of people told me, I asked a lot of people, like, you know, hey, what should I do? A lot of people said they really love books, you know, narrated by the author. I don't think I would have had the confidence to do it, you know, if I hadn't had a little bit of practice, you know, doing podcasts and stuff. And so I don't know, rightly or wrongly, I guess I screwed up the courage to do it. And I also wanted to do it for the benefit, actually, of my mom, who has, she has basically neural degeneration that makes it, she's basically losing her motor function. So it's hard for her to read books, you know, fun and probably, you know, enjoyable and gratifying for her to be able to hear her son's voice, you know, narrating it to her. So those are the reasons. And it's a lot of work, but I hope it comes out good. We'll see.
Hell yeah.
I'm sure it does. Waiting, waiting for it, looking forward to it.
I appreciate it. But what about you, Knut? Even though people already know you, you get to tell us.
Yeah,
about
yeah. What's your intro, man? Who the hell are you? What awesome shit did you write? And what are you up to these days? That was the other one.
Who the hell am I? Well, I have a I have a slightly different background than most people in Bitcoin, because I used to sail a tall ship, and I'm a master mariner by trade. So I studied to become a sea captain, but I never became one. And now I'm the crewing manager for an offshore shipping company. So that's my day job. But Bitcoin is I was about to say slowly but surely, but it's not that slow anymore. but it's taking over more and more. And I've written two books, or actually I've written three, but these are the ones that I'm proud of. The first one is Sovereignty Through Mathematics, and the second one is Independence Reimagined.
I think I've heard of those.
Yeah, you read them. I can definitely vouch.
I have read Sovereignty Through Mathematics. I still have to read Independence Reimagined, but Sovereignty was awesome, and Independence is at the top of my list right now.
Thank you.
Yeah, you'll love it. It's just as good as the first one.
Yeah. Anyway, Guy has narrated them for Audible, so they're available on Audible. And Sovereignty is actually for free as well on your pod. I believe it's episode 308, if I'm not mistaken.
Holy crap! You remember that?
I think I remember that, but I might be. Well, you'll have to look it up.
Yeah.
It's on Guy's pod. If you want it to free for free, you'll have to do some work. And I've written a couple of articles for this excellent magazine here that I'm going to shill as well. This is Hodlonaut and Katya's Citadel 21 magazine, where all the Bitcoin plebs or whatever they're, however that's pronounced, where they write their articles. And I've had the pleasure of writing for that magazine several times now, I think six times or even seven times, and I'm on the cover here somewhere. I think I'm
somewhere
over there, so nice. That's why I got one out of 21 of these prints.
Oh, nice!
Well deserved,
yeah.
Sir.
Nice. Yeah, and the proudest moment of my life, I believe, or maybe for the last 10 years at least. And I'm making videos now, apparently, with Guy and another guy called Ione Appleberg, who turned a couple of one article and one chapter from Sovereignty and a completely new piece into small YouTube animations. And you can find them on YouTube, and you can find them on my author's page at Amazon as well. So,
and if you're not feeling bullish at the moment and you want to feel more bullish, just go watch one of those videos.
My favorite is 20 everything divided by 21 million. That one still is just spot on.
Yeah, that turned into a sort of meme, and I have some news for you. It's in the works right now, so I don't really know what the end product will be, but there will be an exclusive 21 only clothing collection with the everything divided by 21 mil, like hoodies and t-shirts and whatever.
Nice.
We'll see what happens with that. It's in the works.
Love it. Dude, I love Citadel 21. They have been killing it. I don't think I've read all of your pieces. I think I've probably read three or four. If you've done seven, then I definitely haven't gotten them all.
I think you only read one.
I mean, about say in audio, I've only actual reading. I've done like three or four. I just have I would love to have the publications that I wish I could just do every single thing in audio are top Citadel 21 and the Bitcoin Times. Bitcoin Times has fewer articles when they release, so sometimes it's a little bit easier. Like there was actually one in Citadel 21 volume 3, I think maybe. That was like a sci-fi like story. And like as I was reading through it, all I could think was like, oh man, you could have these sound effects here and this and this. And you know, I just wanted to make this big orchestration. Haven't even gotten back to it. I get 7 to 12 articles every week and only manage to get 4 out usually.
Tell me, Guy, I'm curious. In your estimation, how does Bitcoin Times compare to Bitcoin Magazine?
They're different. Bitcoin Magazine is great for news. They keep their pieces shorter. And then like 1 out of every 6 is something that's really, really long and well thought out.
Yep.
That is just really fun to dig into. Like I basically can read essentially everything that Bitcoin Magazine drops. Bitcoin Times is much more philosophical, much more big picture. Like it's a zoom way the hell out and like hit this philosophy, this concept, and you know, this technology, apply it to Bitcoin. And then, you know, they release once a year, right? So
once a year?
Is that right? I feel like maybe the first time. I swear, I think he said something about it being yearly. Maybe they released 2 in the first year.
Oh, wow. Okay.
But Bitcoin Times, like there's only 3 volumes. It's timelessbitcoin.com.
Maybe I'm confusing it with BTC Times.
BTC Times? God, I don't know. There's so many. There's so much good shit out there. It's so hard to keep up with.
Yeah, no, I am trying to keep up with it because I'm like, I follow BTC Magazine or Bitcoin Magazine pretty closely. I should do a better job of following, you know, some of the other Bitcoin only publications. I could do better.
Yep. Hold on 1 second. Hold on. Can y'all hear me?
Yep.
Okay. I think something's going on with my internet. Have y'all had any like scratchiness? What time are we at? I think I want to pause and then we'll come back in at this part. But I want to reset this real quick because I keep losing y'all in audio and having to fill in the blanks.
No worries. It's been good. It's been good on my end.
Okay. It's been good on your end.
It's good here too. Yep.
So while we take a quick break to deal with this audio issue, I want to talk about our sponsor. If you need to buy and sell Bitcoin on a regular basis, the one thing you don't want are constant trading fees that eat away at your balance. This is why Levvl.co was created. That's LVL.co. They believe the future of financial services and banking in Bitcoin is free. And they don't just provide free exchange. They give you full mobile banking services, direct deposit, wire, ACH transfers, and a debit card for your account in the freemium plan. And you get even more, including automatic trading, a world debit card, and a chat with a personal banker with the premium plan at just $9 a month. Levvl.co is in the United States with 28 states available so far and counting, expecting to be countrywide, except New York, sorry guys, by the end of 2021. Check them out at guyswan.com/Levvl. I know we were talking about Bitcoin Times and the publications and like all the crazy stuff. And I actually did look it up. Is the Bitcoin Times, it says they'll release 1 or 2 per year. So it's like bi-yearly or whatever. It's not actually
a year.
But it's really rare. And he puts a lot of work into it and then releases it as this publication, very much like Citadel 21.
They used to be monthly, but they're bi-monthly now. They couldn't really keep up with the...
What, like Citadel was?
Yeah, Citadel was monthly, the first like 5 issues or something, and now it's bi-monthly.
Damn, I don't think I realized that. Time flies so fast in Bitcoin.
Yeah,
a month goes by and I'm like, oh, another year. Citadel 21 released released a new magazine. Oh, well, let's get into Bitcoin here. 2020 ended with a hell of a bang. I want to hear both of y'all's thoughts. It seems rather unquestionable that we are moving, like we are at the cusp of a hell of a bull run. And one that is, really moving into a very different phase of who the buyers are. And I want to get both of your thoughts on, I guess we'll start with Andy actually, is how will this bull run be different? Is this going to be more subdued? Will it have larger or smaller corrections? Kind of seems to be the case so far that we have smaller ones, but you know, that might only hold at, you know, certain scales. And is this going to be lasting longer, or is this going to be over sooner? Like sooner. What do you guys think?
Oh, hey, yeah. So much there, guy. If only I knew. If only I knew. Yeah. So I was surprised when Michael Saylor, you know, shot the starting gun for corporate balance sheets.
Yeah.
I was less surprised by Paul Tudor Jones, who came earlier. I mean, I was, you know, it was still good to see. I mean, it arguably was going to happen at some point. But yeah, the Michael Saylor surprised me, for sure. But it did get my juices flowing, and it did get me thinking about, oh, why doesn't he borrow money to buy even more, which he did.
A few days later.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I think I made that prediction in August, and it happened in September or whatever it was. I can't remember the timing. But as far as this bull run, by larger elements, you know, corporates, for sure, basically wealthy people. I mean, it depends on where you sort of draw the line between, you know, wealthy versus not wealthy. But obviously there's some billionaires piling on. I mean, a lot of the hedge fund guys were already in, but they're fund managers. I'm talking about like billionaire individuals. And then, you know, what the Skybridge, you know, guys, what Scaramucci, Anthony the Mooch Scaramucci would call the mass affluent, quote unquote. They're coming in, and yeah, I don't see signs of retail FOMO. I mean, I've been, you know, shilling Bitcoin to my friends and family and neighbors. The family are a little bit, they're coming in more now, but that's probably only because the intensity level, the shill intensity level with them was the highest always. but yeah, I don't see the retail move yet. I think it will come through. I think it will follow. I mean, yeah, you know, like Bitcoin is one. I mean, as far as the biggest pieces of FUD, you know, front and center being fear of government, there's just no evidence of at least in the United States, and I would argue in most Western countries, and even in developing countries, although it's a mixed bag, there's just not much evidence of hostility at the moment. That doesn't mean that they won't have their oh shit moment, you know, a little later at six-figure Bitcoin. We'll see. But yeah, it's blue. It's blue sky. So I don't know how it shakes out. I do think, I mean, I'll repeat something else I've said, which is I do think Bitcoin ETF, pretty good probability here in the US this year. Yeah. I mean, it's a really clear path for $100 billion Grayscale Bitcoin Trust, right? Grayscale Bitcoin Trust is, I don't know, 15 billion or something. All you need is a few more multiples on Bitcoin price, plus a little more premium, plus, you know, the money flowing in that creates the new shares to get to sort of a ridiculous market cap. And the SEC is going to be asking themselves, how much of a gift do we want to continue to give to Barry Silbert? How much free money are we going to send to Barry Silbert? You know, are we going to make him filthy, stinking rich, or, you know, truly absurd, absurd rich. And so, yeah, that to me is one thing that I am expecting, you know, relatively high probability. And I don't know, I'll leave it there for now and pass the torch.
Yeah, I think the ETF this year, I think their hand is basically forced at this point.
Exactly.
And if we still move up from here, I think the longer they delay, the more embarrassing it is when they finally capitulate, you know, like the more incompetent or the more off the whole, like out of control they appear when it becomes obvious that this is needed. and that, you know, Bitcoin is legitimate and not going anywhere. So I think you're right. I think an ETF is something that will definitely happen in 2021, or at least the groundwork will be laid for it to unravel, you know. There'll be no question. What about you, Kanat?
Yeah, I think all of this is all that you're saying, Andy, is like a testament to how ridiculously early we are in this, because the more and more of these big players that come in, the inevitability of the whole thing becomes more and more obvious. I'm thinking of when you really grasp this thing and you think of Karl Menger's like the basic Austrian subjective theory of value thing, you realize that you yourself set the price. You don't have to sell your Bitcoin for any price, and you could choose, like, I'm selling some, but they have to be valued at a million coin before I do. And then that's the truth. And like, there's no way around that. And Bitcoin has a, like every vector is pointing in that direction. The only thing we don't know is how long it will take. But as I state in that J-curve video, like, there's a probability that we're, even the most bullish among us, are still underestimating this thing. Because if you think about it, game theoretically, like a prisoner's dilemma type scenario, when the really big money and like countries and multinational corporations start seeing that it's all about who gets in first. I think we're in for such a weird ride that we can't really imagine it. Like some guy said that not a lot happens in a year, but a shit ton can happen in 10 years, about like the internet and the technological development in general. But I think this is really true for Bitcoin. Like we're talking about what will happen in 2021, but like 2025 or 2030, who knows? It might be at several billion dollars a coin. I mean,
I definitely agree with you. That was Roy Amara, I think, that you were quoting, you know, Amara's law. And yeah, my expectation, you know, which I wrote about in the book, you know, which is mostly about the debt problem, right? Debt problem will resolve itself this decade. You know, I don't know when.
through Bitcoin.
Well, it seems, you know, it's looking likely, right?
Yeah, I mean, like, regardless of if you've survived and huddled through two of these 10x bull runs, if you invested like $1,000 before one, and you held your Bitcoin through two of these bull runs, then you have 100x your investment, and that's $100,000, and that could like pay off your mortgage or whatever. So people have a real shot at getting out of the hamster's wheel and really getting out of debt completely, and like opt out of all the legacy system. And if you survive, but then again, if you survived two bull runs and you didn't sell, you might as well hold for two more and like wait another 10 years. Yeah, and then you've like 10,000x your initial investment. And that's just mind blowing.
Yeah. It's funny, you know, Andy, you talk about, and I think we're kind of all like on the same page about this, is that the debt imbalances essentially have to come due in one form or another of this decade. Yeah. I just don't see us propping up another bubble and, you know, making it look like everything's fine for another 8 years before we have to deal with this. But what's funny is that I feel like even last time, I really kind of felt like 2008, 2009 was in some way should have been the end of the story, but there was nowhere to exit to. That it was like, it's like we're all in this giant, like Olympic-sized swimming pool, And we all know that the water is like terrible and disgusting and that it's like leaking out. And, you know, there's cracks in the pool or whatever, but all we can do, the only options are just like a bunch of buckets, like sitting around the pool.
Yeah. Go on. Sorry.
Okay. The only options are like a bunch of buckets sitting around the pool. So everybody can't just exit the pool and get in these buckets. Like there's just not enough there. So the only option we have is to just all the new water that we create to just keep dumping it back into the pool, even though it's just leaking out constantly. So we just have to try to keep this thing running, even though we know the gig is going to be up. And now Bitcoin is like this giant valley just waiting to be filled as an ocean that just doesn't have a cap. Like it's the only thing that actually has the capacity to hold all of that value and have a feedback loop that it actually sustains itself because the value is going into it. And that we can finally drain this disgusting thing that we've all been festering in for 30 years. And we have an exit. We have a way to get up, get out, and go find clean water and something that's not going to leak and we don't have to constantly manage just to keep it working.
Yeah, and like the 2008-2009 bubble, that was, even if you discard Bitcoin and like pretend that Bitcoin never showed up, it would still have been better to just take the crash and take a depression then. That's a better solution than creating another bubble that's like 10 times bigger, which is what they did. Yeah. And it happened just between Bush and Obama, right? So they had an agreement there that the only thing to do was to bail out everyone and pretend that nothing had happened in order to save their faces, I guess. And it's like the worst decision ever. They should have taken the fall. Of course, it would have been rough, but what they've, the bubble they've created since is much worse. And the world is more connected now and more fragile than ever. So I'm so glad we have this thing because it's hope. It's a beacon of hope in a world that would have been really, really depressingly bleak without it.
Yeah. I want to underscore your point, Knut. Yeah. I agree 100%. And this is, I think, one of the most important facts, one of the most important narratives that we Bitcoiners have to help people understand. Because when I talk, the thing about Bitcoin, as you know, is it's the most interesting thing there is. It's the most ethical thing there is. And it can make you rich. So, yeah. But focusing on the ethical piece, I try, you know, I tried in my book. What's that?
I said, that is a powerful combination.
Yeah, well, exactly. It is an unstoppable, powerful combination. Well put, guy. But with respect to the ethical element, and this is one thing I have been writing about is, yeah, this people, we have to help people understand giving people more junk, right? Okay, you had one too many drinks, you know, back when we went off the gold standard in 1971. So we should have got you off that, but instead we gave you the Coke. And then in the next cycle, we moved you on to heroin, you know, and now you're on fentanyl. And there is like, fentanyl's the last step. Like there's no more, you know, gas in the tank. There's nothing more we can give the addict. And as we know, the worse we get them addicted, the worse we get the economy addicted on free money, the worse will be the unwind, and there will be an unwind. So yeah, I take the view that if we can bring the unwind forward sooner, you know, maybe less people will die as a result.
Yeah, it's as horrible, it's as harsh as that, unfortunately.
Yeah, and I talk about, you know, I live in California, right? And the big giant problem most people are focused on around here, of course, is climate change, is global warming. And I think it is a problem. But for me, it's not, I'm trying to explain to people, that's not the biggest problem. The biggest problem is the potential world war or civil war that will ensue from, you know, the unraveling of the bubble getting too big. And if we can avoid that, we might literally save, you know, hundreds of thousands of lives.
Yeah. And to the point of climate change, everyone misses the root problem. There's overconsumption. Yeah. It's obviously overconsumption.
Yeah.
We produce too much shit that we don't need. And why do we do that? Because of a failed monetary system in the base layer of all societies. It's just ridiculous. And no one addresses the real issue. People are so naive that they think that politicians can somehow change the weather. I mean, they obviously can't. They're not the ones. Don't focus on them. They won't change shit. They never do. Yeah. And it's like, oh, the next government will be better. Of course it won't.
I think it's equally arrogant to think that we're going to get a bunch of politicians who can figure out how to fix the climate and control the weather. Actually, I think that's even more absurd than thinking that they can tell us what prices are in the market to keep things balanced, and they can manage the money to make sure that we never have booms and busts. Ignore the horrible booms and busts that we do every 9 years. Yeah. I think they are more ignorant and incompetent in comparison to the climate or anything in the natural world, which the economy is the natural world.
Yeah.
Then they are at the economy, and they fail so miserably at the economy. How could you possibly be like, oh yeah, we're going to redesign Mother Nature to make it work to fit us better?
And they're so connected. You see this become ghost towns because they never get done. There are cities in China that could host a million people, but then they get another idea and they scrap the whole project, and the skyscrapers are still there, but no one lives there. It's so wasteful and so weird that it can exist. And the only reason that it can exist is because of this monetary expansion thing. And it's more wasteful than anything. And people think Bitcoin is wasteful. It's not wasteful. It's the opposite. If you have a means of converting energy into money or into value directly, that's the purest thing there is. There's nothing, and it incentivizes everyone to use the cheapest energy source available, and the distance is not a problem anymore because you don't have to send the electricity through lines. You can use Bitcoin as a battery and put mining rigs wherever the wind blows, wherever the sun shines, and wherever the geothermal vents are. It's really easy when you think about it. You could just solve climate change by changing your personal perspective.
And one of the most fascinating things about what that does is that it secures the money against the very incentive we have to waste and consume. So it solves the underlying problem while finding all the cheapest energy sources that are being wasted right now to fix that security problem. It fixes a waste problem to fix a security problem that fixes the incentive problem that causes the waste and the overconsumption. It's a huge feedback loop of just
good
realigning
stuff.
Things, you know?
Yeah. Did you notice this? I noticed when Bitcoin started rocketing the last time and through this cycle as well. And when you realize that you're getting more wealthy at a pace that you didn't see, you didn't think this was possible before Bitcoin. And what it has done to at least to my psyche is that I'm less wasteful. I'm less inclined to buy shit. I'm more inclined to save and store for the future and think about the next generation and all of these things, and less inclined to buy shit.
Even though
I have a lot more means to do so, I just don't want to, because why would I? if the money can buy me 10 times as much next year, why would I spend it now? Every time I did, I've had regrets about it afterwards.
I have deeper concerns and dilemmas about $50 payments today than I do when I was 100th as wealthy. Like, yeah. like it the trade-off of seeing exactly how much it could cost down the road. It's just like, do I really need it? You know, like how convenient is that $20 I'm about to spend? You know, like how useful.
I faced the decision a few months ago because I'm having the third kid and my current car does not fit three car seats. So my wife's like, we got to get a minivan. And I'm like, that's like two coins. Are you crazy?
Yeah, I know what you mean.
Yeah, we're actually in the car market. We're just gonna get it on, you know, lowest debt that we possibly can. We had a second car that just been sitting around for ages, and when it crashed in March to, you know, back down to 3,000, I was like, I couldn't find any other. I mean, there was like a little bit of capital that we had like off to the side, and I was like, okay, Bitcoin. Like, I just dumped everything I could, went through the house, sold like 8 or 9 things on Facebook Marketplace for cash, put that into Bitcoin, and then finally was like, we don't need the car this bad. We use it once a month. Let's just get rid of it. And sold that thing and managed to get a little bit after it had already gone back up to like 6K or something like that. Took a bit, but it's so funny. It's like, we were just like, you just like wipe out everything that we don't need. All right, let's just barrel into this, buy the hell out of this dip, and, you know, sit and chill for a minute. But yeah, I'm not selling Bitcoin when we get the car, even though we need one really bad.
No.
We'll take the debt. We'll take the fiat debt. They're going to devalue that shit at 20% a year. Easy. That's making money back.
People keep asking, you know, because I'm a financial advisor, you know, they're like, hey, should I go into debt to buy Bitcoin? And what the admonition I make to them is, yeah, I mean, if it's structured, you know, long-term, which actually auto debt generally is, right? It's a fixed payment. It's a 5-year maturity. Mm-hmm. You know, it's very different from borrowing against your Bitcoin, you know, collateralized on the exchange with, you know, one of the lending companies where you can get liquidated if the price goes down for a short period of time, as it did in March. Several, I'm sure you guys know, you know, several high profile Bitcoiners who probably had decent stacks, you know, got smoked in that event. So yeah, I that's what I tell people. Make sure you have some fiat income and make sure the debt is structured. Yeah. Is structured properly.
Yeah. Risky things.
I mean, you guys are probably like, well, I have conviction, so whatever, I'll take the risk. And you know, I don't know. What can I say?
It's so funny because it's something that like I would do, and like I think that, like, you know, if I could get like a mortgage and like we're refinancing right now, and hope to, if Jesus, how long this is taking, I don't know. It's been driving me crazy. Started this when it was literally $6,000 or $7,000, and I still hadn't gone through this whole process. Fingers crossed we're at the end of it, but you know, it seems like a no-brainer to me. Although we are obviously getting a lower interest rate, so it's actually going to cost us, you know, less over time. Yeah. I'm super reluctant. Like, I've had people ask me, and I'm not a financial advisor, I'm just a Bitcoin enthusiast, so I'm just going to tell you to buy Bitcoin. But like, I'm like, oh yeah, it's a speculative attack. Like, that's the only nominally like sound investment to take. Like, if you think inflation is going to outpace interest rates, then yeah, take out a big ass loan and buy Bitcoin. But I stop myself every time. That's what I want my response to be. It's like, yeah, take out like $1 million loan, buy Bitcoin. It'd be great.
Yeah, but
I can't just go telling people to do that.
No, Bitcoin is not risk-free.
Not at all.
We should be very like, but the risks are not what people think. People think the risk is that the price can go down, but I don't view that as a risk at all. That's sort of obvious to me that long term the price cannot go down, not in any, like, that it wouldn't matter, just short term. But the real risks are like boating accidents and like forgetting your seat phrase and stuff like that. That's or a fire or a death in the family or what you don't know where life is taking you. And that's like, and when you hold Bitcoin, you have no third party like looking after you. And that's the risk. But that's what separates the lions from the from the sheep, right?
That's right. That personal responsibility, that personal sovereignty. Exactly. That's the game.
Yeah, there's something really interesting. You know, you talked about kind of just a bit ago, talking about, you know, in a couple of years we could be seeing, you know, $1 billion a coin, which sounds absurd. And you know, that's kind of like there were a couple of comments underneath your "it's going to be J-shaped, not S-shaped" video, like in that kind of like thought line. And what's funny about it is that like we are going to be entering a phase, you know, when Bitcoin, I think 2021 is when we open that door and start playing in that field, when a measurable, like a step move in Bitcoin corresponds with a loss of purchasing power of the dominant currencies. Like right now, you know, a whole bunch of people will use the meme, Max Kaiser does this all the time or whatever, talking about, oh, it's not that Bitcoin is going up, it's that the dollar is falling. And even though that's the case in theory, it's obviously not the case flatly in purchasing power. Like the dollar may have lost a little tiny little bit in purchasing power, but if that is exactly, if that's what amount that went into Bitcoin, it, like a 0.1% move in the dollar could cause a 3x spike in Bitcoin if we were just taking it out of the dollar pool and putting it into the Bitcoin pool. But there will be a point where a 3% move, 5% move in Bitcoin actually corresponds to a 0.2%, 0.5% move down in the dollar. And that's going to be a really interesting, that's when talking about $1 billion a coin isn't actually all that unrealistic, because they correspond with each other. One is decreasing in value while the other is increasing, and they it's an exponential feedback loop, you know, like that $1 million a coin goes to $1 billion a coin, not because Bitcoin has to 1000x, it's because the dollar gets cut in, you know, to 1/100th of its purchasing power.
And when you talk about the purchasing power of the dollar, do you mean like the purchasing power for like groceries and
for real goods, like, for real goods,
consumer goods, right? A consumer goods basket.
But what people miss in this is like an apartment in central London or New York or Tokyo. Mm-hmm. That's also a consumer good. And but it's seldom included in the inflation calculations that the different states put out. So like they put a figure like, oh, milk went up this much and the cheese went up this much. And they forget about the things that are really valuable, because they go up much faster in price. And that means that the dollar and the euro and the yen are losing purchasing power at a much faster rate than we're led to believe. And there's with the consumer goods, the regular day-to-day goods, there's an inertia to everything, and there's inertia to inflation. There, if you raise the price of milk to like 2x, you lose a lot of profit because people won't buy milk the next day, and you can't really do this thing so fast. But the thing about the J shape of the adoption thing is a lot of people misinterpreted the video, because most of it is about what happens post hyper Bitcoinization, like after Bitcoin has taken over everything and we have everything divided by 21 million. That's when the J shape really starts to rocket, because that's when we have a global free market economy with sound money, and that will make everything so much more effective. And if you read Jeff Booth's book, The Price of Tomorrow, you can see that even in this inflationary semi-free market world, like production costs are already going to zero for almost everything. And so are transportation costs. And like when you have autonomous vehicles with solar panels on them driving around, like you could literally produce something for free and ship it around to anywhere in the world for free. And combine that with a money with unlimited purchasing power. It's just impossible to wrap your head around when you think about it in those terms. It's just bizarre.
Yeah, I think you're spot on. I love Jeff. I have a mailing list that I, you know, send people Bitcoin stuff. And I, in my email that went out yesterday, I told people Jeff Booth's book was the most important, you know, book basically of this year, most important book that I read. Well, sorry, of 2020, of last year.
Yeah.
I also couldn't help mentioning, of course, that that he just wrote me a 5-star review for my book. So that that was opportunity to show. Yeah. So I'm very grateful. I'm very grateful to Jeff Booth. But yeah, he's
can I just cut in there? Because so are we, because I have to say this right now, because Jeff Booth recommended our little J-shaped video there.
Oh, awesome.
Did he? Nice. Yeah, he did. Yeah. So he chilled that right. One the other day.
He's right on. He's totally credible. You know, he's a very successful guy, extremely articulate. I mean, he is one of the most important legs of the Bitcoin stool in terms of educating people. And I completely agree with you, Knut. The combination of taking share from, to basically taking store of value share from assets, and then what that does in terms of catapulting us into more rapid growth. I mean, it is. The upside, I sometimes struggle some days to wrap my head around what the potential upside could be, and it is truly mind-boggling.
Yeah,
it's insane to think that, you know, there are monetary premiums on almost all commodities. There are monetary premiums on equities. There are monetary premiums on real estate, like gold, like all of these things have 10%, 20% higher price because there's nowhere else to park your money. Because there's nowhere to park value that doesn't lose. And you talk about like the CPI, like CPI is just a garbage metric. And you actually realize that CPI is actually a better measure of wages than it is actual inflation. Because when you measure the things that have to just be bought, that people don't go in, you know, the things that you either have on a credit card at 22% interest, or you actually have to have the money from your paycheck to go get it, like groceries, coffee, a night out, going to the movies, like this sort of thing. Those things can't go up in price unless wages go up in price. So literally the economy just starts to collapse if the costs of those things don't get adjusted, or they don't adopt new technology quicker, they don't fire some of their employees and dump more work onto the remaining employees so that they can keep prices low. They're actually grabbing for the inflation index. They're actually grabbing the things that are least likely to increase in price. Whereas the things that are fueled by debt are the things that don't respond to wages, because I can get a lower interest rate and go into 10x the debt on my same wage. If I'm buying a house, if I'm paying for healthcare, nobody pays for healthcare up front. You go into giant freaking debt on low interest rate, cars, all of those things, they skyrocket in price. And of course those things get taken out of the CPI because we don't want to measure that. That looks really, really bad. And guess what? The government uses that metric to decide how much they pay all of their employees. Jesus, it's only 2%. It's not 15. I promise. It's only 2. We're only going to give you a 2% raise this year.
No,
so it's crazy.
The framework that I cleave to, you know, which is in the book, is Menger's framework, which is three primary types of goods: consumption goods, which we understand; capital goods, you know, which produce more of the rest; and then the monetary good. And everything in the world is some combination of those three, right? Mm-hmm. Almost none of them is pure, right? The house it's a capital good, but as you pointed out, you know, Guy, it's a consumption good, you know, and some consumption goods, you know, are used partly as monetary goods, you know, et cetera, et cetera. And yeah, having finally, for the first time, a pure monetary good changes the game. It changes it.
Yeah. It's going to hit all of those markets and soak up all of that premium.
And I like the framing of the, you know, I like Michael Saylor's, you know, framing. He focuses on me a $50,000 a year income, right, to buy a fixed income. And yeah, when yields go from 2.5% to 0.5%, well, now you got to pay five times as much to buy that income stream. And that piece is even regardless of what's happening with true inflation, right? Regardless of what's actually happening with the, you know, the, well, I don't even want to say true inflation, but let's say with the consumer goods basket. The other thing I've been pitching lately to people is when talking about Bitcoin or just talking about the monetary system, I try to start from a blank slate. I say, let's say I want to create a new system of money. I have some requirements though. The first requirement is it must embed tax, right? It must have an embedded tax. That's inflation. The second requirement is the inflation tax must be unmeasurable with any level of fidelity, right? Okay, that's the second requirement. The third requirement is that this tax must be taxation without representation, right? There must be no, you know, sort of direct conduit from the people to the setting of the embedded tax in the system. And then, of course, the fourth requirement is it must be a regressive tax, right?
That's Friedman, right? Taxation without representation.
Probably. Yeah, I don't know.
Inflation is taxation without representation.
Yes. So there you go. On those four requirements, we have, ta-da, fiat.
Yeah.
And people,
those are the most fundamental things about it that make it what it is. Yep.
Exactly. Yeah. And when you have those four, you know, brutal and terrible realities, you know, I think it starts to get the wheels turning in some people's heads.
Talking about brutal realities, the skeptics have, like, with this massive price run, which is funny. I kind of thought we would hang out. I thought we would take a break at the all-time high and we'd have like a bit of a crash. We did not. we just barreled right through that. But these skeptics have come out of the woodwork. Everybody is talking about how Bitcoin, I guess, is just on its fourth valueless bubble. Or fifth now. One, two, three.
Clueless.
Four. Yeah, five. Technically five. Even though the price charts only really show four. But on a scale of 1 to 10, how butthurt do you guys think Peter Schiff is right now?
He's too ignorant to be butthurt. I mean, he's been at it for 10 years. He's
he
knows how to fail at predicting the price of Bitcoin.
Yeah, that's right. I also think, you know, as you know, the more controversial you are, the bigger your audience gets, and that's an asset. Even if he ends up being, you know, so painfully wrong, you know, he'll still have this huge audience.
He's famous. And he's famous for being wrong.
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah, he'll be fine.
I had a conversation with Ione Appleberg about this. We have to be that's one of the main points we when we started collaborating, like we have to take care that we don't become too dogmatic in our thinking and to like we have to always be open to new angles and like try not to put ourselves in a corner, because there are some hardcore Bitcoiners that seem like they're very what's a good verb, like adverse to different opinions, and like when it influences everything you tend to be like sort of not willing to take in new ideas, and that's sort of why you came into this thing in the first place, because you had a curious mind. So
I think it's dangerous to be afraid of skepticism, to be afraid
question skepticism,
being contradicted, being questioned or whatever. And I try to, I don't read a whole lot of stuff that's like counter Bitcoin on the show, but every once in a while, like I'll just love to dig into one, particularly if one actually gives like a half decent argument. It's fun to, It's fun to really, you know, dig into it. And I think, you know, that whole idea of Bitcoin, the whole idea of keeping this system alive is adversarial thinking. If we're not figuring out how to kill it, if we're not entertaining those ideas, like that's how you get the hop cycle. That's how you get the technological hop cycle that Giacomo talks about in one of his recent pieces is, you know, we get complacent and we stop thinking about how to kill the thing. And then we stop fixing those little holes. Yeah. And then we grow 10x, 100x without thinking about those holes. And now those holes are also 10x, 100x. And we're not ready to defend it in this way because we just didn't want to admit it. We didn't want to talk about it. It's, you know, like it wasn't a big deal, you know, a hundredth of the price ago, but now it's a big deal.
And that's the honey badger. That's the anti-fragility. You know, that's the, you have to keep attacking it. I mean, there's the system itself and then there's Bitcoiners, right? There's us who have to be constantly challenging assumptions and constantly basically taking arrows and bullets at least in order to make sure that we're doing everything we can to help this thing reach the next level.
Yeah, and like the hornets should behave more like the honey badger itself, because the hornets sometimes have opinions about what Bitcoin is and what it isn't. And the honey badger does not care what you think it is and how you think it will behave. It ought to be studied rather than like, we can't do anything about it except like learn how to use it.
Yeah,
that's the only thing.
That's right. We need to have the humility to observe and react. And yeah, exactly. Take our human action in reaction to this thing, which just is, right? Yeah. I mean, the other side of that, of course, is as Bitcoin educators, we can, you know, help people to understand, you know, which causes the buy-in and the feedback and makes it more powerful. But I agree with you. I agree with you, Knut. At any moment in time, at a snapshot point in time, all you can really do, is try to understand it.
And I think another thing to just always keep in mind is, particularly after you like get down in the rabbit hole, your worldview is so different. Like it's just so, everything is from a different angle, you know, like it's not at all the same world that you were standing in just a couple of months ago. You get further and further distant from that view of how things work. And when you do, like I think skepticism, derision, and like dismissiveness of Bitcoin should be expected. Like I think from anybody who has like that old worldview, which becomes really hard to reimagine how I used to think about things. But to anybody who holds that, Bitcoin can't possibly look like anything but a scam. You know what I mean? Like you have to know and think about so many things differently and know things on a different level that I'm skeptical of somebody who just finds out about Bitcoin and is really all on board with it immediately. Like they're sometimes the people who worry me more than the people who are immediately dismissive and skeptical of it.
Yeah.
On that note, though, what do you guys think? You know, 2021 is going to be a hell of a year. I think if the first 3 days or 4 days or whatever are any kind of a measure, what do you guys think the biggest challenge that we probably that will, you know, what's the bill that will come due this year?
Personally or like on a macro level?
Either, actually. Because from a personal standpoint is that, you know, that could be the cost for many different people. Many people could actually run into, you know, some sort of a challenge. But, you know, macro as well. What do you think is going to be the most important challenge that Bitcoin faces this year?
All right. Well, so look, I'll give one, okay? If Bitcoin, you know, moves into the six figures, we may see a lot more, you know, jawboning coming out of governments, right? About, oh, now this thing's actually a threat. I happen to believe that Bitcoin, right where we sit today, is already has already won, right? It's already too strong to kill, yet it's still too small to matter. If we get into six figures, the too small to matter piece will not be the case anymore. Yeah. And so I am watching, and you know, I have some concern about the two paths for Bitcoin through the, you know, hey, it's really big enough to matter, and hey, it really starts to reshape the economy and society. There's the easy path and there's the hard path. And I would prefer to see us on the easy path. This is something I've been writing about, and but it could go either way. And yes, if we get through, you know, if we get through that level in terms of, you know, total network value, you know, a couple trillion dollars plus, that's one thing that could come to the fore. Let's just, we may finally, I don't want to say meet the big boss exactly, but the big boss may, let's say, look harder in our direction.
Yeah. The hard path may become more visible as to what it might look like if we end up there.
I have a bit more optimistic view, I think. The more I think about it, the more I see a smoother transition because of the game theoretical elements that underpin the entire thing, like jurisdictions that are friendly to this will flourish faster. And like there's so much governments are so slow to act and everything, and I don't think they see the threat, and that they ever will see the threat until it's way too late. I mean, we're way ahead of them already. So I don't really, that's what I hope for. Like I think the biggest challenges for 2021 will not necessarily be Bitcoin related. But rather I wonder what other like scary thing they'll come up with after COVID, after everyone's vaccinated. I mean, because I have nothing against vaccines. I don't like the word mandatory vaccination, because I don't like the word mandatory at all. But I think a vaccine is less dangerous than a virus. Like I put dangerous shit into my body every once in a while, and like I'm not afraid of taking a vaccine if it helps me travel around a bit more. I'm looking forward to that, definitely. I'm just, like, you don't realize how much you like traveling until you like can't do it for a year.
Yeah.
Like so looking forward to meeting all of you guys at one of these conferences, and the next one is just going to be, and of course in Michael's 100K party,
his yacht party.
Yeah. I think I'm invited. I've talked to him. So
I can't decide if we're going to have, like, in the context of like the easy path or the hard path, is that like trying to get into the game theory, the potential profit for everybody who is friendly to it, like the easy path is absolutely on the table. And particularly with the speed which Bitcoin will reward someone who is friendly to it. I mean, look at the return that Michael Saylor has had after 3 months of touching it, you know? And like, I think everyone in their own self-interest will, I mean, you talked about it, Andy, like that trifecta of it's ethical, it's, you know, sustainable or whatever, and then it massive profit potential at the exact same time. That is hard to turn down. If the more people who realize that, particularly in like at the upper echelons of the legacy system, then that immediately sends us down the easy path. But I'm, even though personally, it would be really nice to go down the easy path, from kind of a bigger picture step back, even though I would hate it, I kind of feel like it would be better in the long term if we ended up on the hard path.
There's a point to this.
Yeah.
Like, if we didn't have Bitcoin, we would be on a very, very hard path. Like, yeah. Everyone would have, like, the hardest path. You can't invent a harder path than the one we've built with all the bubbles. Yeah. So like, Bitcoin is like one of those giant pillows that a guy whose parachute didn't work can land on. Or, like, we can make the really hard path that we're already on a lot less hard, like a lot softer. So that's how I view it. Like, I can't get around, like, how Bitcoin can be a bad thing for what's to come. What's to come will be hard, but since we have Bitcoin, it will not be as hard as it would have been without Bitcoin. And this is true for everyone who's just a tiny bit into a Bitcoin.
Yeah. I'll tell you what, it's going to be interesting. 2021 is going to be a hell of a year. I guess we should probably wrap this up. I know you guys got to go. Why don't we get a final thoughts here, Andy?
I mean, I'll just, you know, key off the, you know, hard path versus easy path. I actually, okay, just to be clear, I actually think the quote unquote easy path is far more likely. You know, I think the game theory is working in our favor. I'm just thinking that I would like to just minimize the already small probability of the hard path. That's how I'm thinking about it. And Knut, I agree with you. You know, the debt problem will resolve itself one way or the other. So yeah, I actually that's part of the point, which is that is correct. And the quote unquote easy versus hard path in the next couple of years, you know, with respect to government, is partly about helping them, you know, and helping people understand that you are right, basically, that is true. So that's my feelings about it. But yeah, I couldn't be more excited, you know, just to your point, Guy, for 2021. Couldn't be more excited, couldn't be more bullish. It's gonna, I think, be a hell of a ride. And I'm really grateful to both you guys for having been part of my journey. And I'm really grateful to everyone listening and watching, you know, because everybody who's involved with this in any way, you know, is contributing to the project. So I'll leave it there.
Yeah. Hell yeah, man. Knut, on to you, man.
Yeah, I agree with almost with everything Andy said. And thanks to you two guys for making my journey a bit easier as well. And like, I'm an optimist. I'm a cynic, but I'm an optimistic cynic. So I'm looking forward to 2021. I have no idea what. Then again, I was looking forward to 2020 as well, but that turned out to be a shit year. But then again, not a shit year. I mean, we're happy, aren't we?
Yeah. Not we a shit year be. For Bitcoin.
Yeah, it made the year so much easier. Bitcoin. It could have been.
Yeah, it is. Yeah, exactly. We were right. And like the song "Hate to Say I Told You So" by the Hives plays on and on in my head when I talk to normies. And yes, as I said, just looking forward to traveling again and doing all these things and like meeting all you guys and like doing stuff and more collaborations. All across the board. I'm looking forward to all of that. It's like I started writing, but now I'm doing all sorts of stuff. And I'm why not?
Yeah, that's a good 2021 like resolution, yeah. or whatnot is work with people more, because it's amazing how much better the product is, the potential, yeah, is. And how much faster you can get stuff done working with a team of four or five, yeah, people than working by yourself. That's probably something I need to really, really be serious about this year. Yeah. It's going to be an insane year for Bitcoin. I wish we'd been able to get into it, but the Office of the Comptroller of the Currency, I'm going to do an episode on it soon. But like what they just announced yesterday, just absolutely insane. One thing that I'm seeing that I really love right now is all of the Bitcoiners spreading out into the other platforms. really quickly. A lot of YouTube comment, like content, like Knut, just the videos or whatever that you're making, like these things are landing
we're
on
we're making
YouTube and it, we're making yes and then BTZ Sessions is you know, going through another growth spurt. Breedlove is jumping on there. I'm seeing a lot of Facebook groups pop up, like it's spreading quickly from the hub that is Twitter.
LinkedIn, a lot of content on LinkedIn as well.
So it's going to be an exciting year, and I think this is when we ramp up our production, our explanations, our answering of the skeptics, and really make it obvious, explain why it is that this massive run is happening. And it's going to be nuts. We need to tighten the belts and, tie those laces, because shit's about to get real, guys.
Looking forward to it, gents.
Hell yeah.
Yeah. Looking forward to doing something creative that I haven't done before. That's always a target.
Yeah, get that
a message to everyone listening. You know, create something. You know, contribute. You know, contribute anything. Give it a shot. You might be surprised. People might like it.
You're not as boring as you think you are.
Especially if you're talking about Bitcoin.
All right, Jets. Guys. I got to drop. This was a blast. Thank you so much.
Yeah, same to you. Bye.
Thanks, guys.
Thanks, guys.
All right, guys, thank you so much for listening to this episode. It really was just an awesome one. Don't forget to follow Knut and Andy on Twitter. Andy is at Edstrom Andrew, I think is his handle. And then Knut is just Knut von Holm. So those are their Twitter handles. You can find those both in the show notes. I just link straight to them. Of course, check out their books, Why Buy Bitcoin? And then Sovereignty Through Mathematics and Independence Reimagined. Thank you to our awesome sponsors who keep this show alive. We have the BitBox O2 hardware wallet from Shift Crypto. And I absolutely swear by this thing. I love it. And then, of course, Level.co, the free mobile banking services for Bitcoin and no trading fee exchange, which is just too cool. So check them both out at guyswan.com. They're right there at the top of the page. I will catch you all back here tomorrow with another episode. Some really great reads I've been starting on. I've got like 3 or 4 in the works and putting them together. I think it's going to be an awesome week. Stick with me. Don't forget to share this out with everybody you know who is getting into the Bitcoin space. This is the place they're going to learn and hear about all of it and stay up to date on what's going on. This is Bitcoin Audible. I am Guy Swan. And until next time, everybody, take it easy, guys. This has been a 111 production, and you were listening to Bitcoin Audible on the Cryptoeconomy Network.